Hello and welcome to our gut repair and alkalizing nutrition for the digestion. Digestion basics, how it all works. And the goal of the program is to familiarize you with how your digestion works, where it can go wrong, and then give you very specific steps to take to heal it. So I'm excited to be here because I love talking digestion, because I think it just is the root of so many problems that we don't really even realize it's the root of the problem. And for that reason, I'm going to share with you how, you know, sometimes symptoms that you don't even relate to your gut are related to the gut. So I invite you to sit back, take out a pad of paper, take out a pen, and take notes, because there's going to be a lot here that we're going to go over. And as a result of the sharing, you should have some insights about your own health, about where some things might be going wrong. And at the end, I'm going to give you a set of action steps. I believe that there are five that you can take right away to get started. And I'll go through what we're going to be covering in the next and subsequent modules, but we're going to be going through step by step the digestive tract from head to toe. Well, maybe not head to toe, but basically mind to anus, as I like to say. So let's just go ahead and jump right in, okay? I just really am excited about the topic. And as usual, what I need to do is just let you know that the information I'm presenting is not intended to replace medical advice. It's not intended to replace your relationship with a medical practitioner, but to enhance your relationship by providing you education and experience that I've had in working with thousands of clients and patients over the last 23 years of my clinical practice that gears around functional nutrition and nutritional endocrinology. And so if you're under the care of a doctor, especially if you've got some serious digestive things or other health issues going on, I highly encourage you to take really good notes and then share the information with your practitioner and work together as a team to get your problems resolved. And if you want to continue to work with me and in this group setting, we're going to provide lots of education that's going to guide you on that path to success with your digestion. So I want to just start by doing an overview, a bird's eye view of what we're going to be covering, and then we're going to do together a 30-day reset for the digestive tract. And everybody will be working on what they need, but we're going to be working on a leaky gut repair if you need it, a candida cleanse if you need it, and other ways to just restore the gut flora, reduce the number of unwanted organisms, and repair whatever's going on with your digestive tract. And I'm going to be getting into a little bit more about why the digestion is so important to work with and how it all works and what kind of signs you may be getting that your digestion isn't working well. But let's just start with an overview. Part one is the digestion basics, how it all works and how your digestion works with the rest of your body. In part two, we're going to be looking at the upper GI, the upper gastrointestinal system. We're going to start at the top, the mind, which is an important part of digestion, the mouth, and the stomach. Those are the things we're going to be working on in part two. In part three, we're going to really look deeply at intestinal detox repair and recipes. We're going to provide you with a really nice recipe guide. And last I looked, I think it was around 140 pages of recipes that we put together to help you to have fun with food while you're healing your digestion. And I know everybody gets scared about making changes and having to fix their digestion because you're afraid you're not going to get to eat. And indeed, there will be some kind of gearing down and allowing the digestive tract to rest with less food, but we've given you some really nice recipes that will help soothe and heal and repair your digestion. So that's what the whole thing is about. And then finally, we're going to optimize elimination. And elimination generally happens through the large bowel, the large intestine, but there's also some other channels of elimination that I will talk to you a little bit about optimizing as well, like your skin, sweat, right, and your liver and gallbladder and how they work and your kidneys. So those are organs of elimination. But the primary focus, because we're talking digestive health here, will be on the large intestine for eliminating. Because a lot of people will say, you are what you eat. And that's not necessarily true, because even if you eat great food and the food is good for you, if you're not able to effectively absorb the nutrients from that food, break down the nutrients, absorb them, and then eliminate the wastes, you're going to be in trouble because your body's going to reabsorb all the wastes. So it's just as important to optimize the way you get rid of the foods that you take in as to optimize how well your body breaks them down into the particles it needs and then absorbs it. All right? So before we go further and I go into like what we're going to learn and then start in on teaching you about your digestive tract, I mean, after all, we all need to know how our body parts work, and unfortunately, we weren't born with a user's guide, right? We had to kind of figure this out on our own, and we didn't necessarily learn it from mom and dad. They just basically said, here, kid, here's your food, eat it. They didn't really share with us how our food affected us, how our thoughts affected us, and it's only as we grow up and things start to go wrong and illnesses and symptoms rear their ugly heads do we start to question. Like, it's the digestive tract and food goes through there. I wonder if food has an impact on health. And I'll share a little bit about my revelation regarding to that in just a little bit. But I want to let you know how widespread digestive problems are. So you know you're not alone. If you have ever experienced ulcers or know people who have, you're in good company because there are 14 million people in the U.S. alone that have been diagnosed with ulcers. And there's probably a whole bunch more that have symptoms but just have never gone through the process of being diagnosed. There's 56 million people who have diagnosed reflux. Reflux meaning that the contents of the stomach starts jumping out of the stomach and backs up into the esophagus. And if the esophagus and the stomach and how all that works is not real clear to you right now, by the end of it will be, because we're going to go through the overall anatomy of the digestive tract. And 60 million have heartburn, meaning not only is the food going back up into the esophagus, but they're having pain. They're having this burning kind of sensation either in their esophagus, in their chest, or in their stomach, or in their intestine for that matter. So heartburn is what it's usually called, mainly because the burning happens somewhere in the chest, right near the heart, usually. And that's because it's in the esophagus, the food tube. And then 76 million people have foodborne illnesses. Like, we think we live in this day and age where we're really clear on germs and the whole germ theory and antimicrobial soap and wiping down counters and cleaning things. Why is it then that 76 million people have foodborne illnesses? That's a lot. This is not just little child's play numbers. These are big numbers. And there's 80 million people who have irritable bowel syndrome. And irritable bowel syndrome is usually classified as a condition where you never really know what's going to go on down there. You may be running and hopping from bathroom to bathroom because you have diarrhea, or your bowels aren't moving for days at a time. And usually it alternates because the bowel is irritated. There's a very thick, plump mucous membrane that lines the entire tract, starting in your stomach, lightly lines your esophagus, but mainly starting in your stomach and goes down the rest of it. And there are lots of things that disrupt that, a lot of things that damage that lining. And we're going to share with you a list, a chart, which show you some of those things. But they get damaged, that mucus gets damaged by organisms, microorganisms that don't belong there. For example, H. pylori, Helicobacter pylori, which is a bacteria that only recently has been found to be one of the underlying causes of stomach ulcers. H. pylori, it damages that really nice protective mucous membrane, which leads to all sorts of digestive disarray, which we'll talk about in a little bit. It's estimated that half the world's population has been inhabited by H. pylori. They may be asymptomatic at this point, but that's a lot of folks, okay? And in the U.S., it's estimated to be about 20% of the population. That's huge numbers to be infested by a particular bug that causes symptoms of stomach ulcers. I wanted to teach you how to tell if your digestion needs attention. This is an important piece. You know, some people it's obvious. They've got cramping, they've got bloating, they've got gas, they've got diarrhea. Obvious that the digestion needs attention. But there's influences on from the digestive tract on other body systems. And you may not realize that your headaches are related to your digestion or your joint pain or your autoimmune disease. So we're going to share with you how you know. There's we're going to go through digestive anatomy and physiology. And for those of you whose science scares you, I promise you it won't be the boring, very detailed version that you might have learned in elementary school and then forgot. No, it's going to be stuff that is going to make sense. It's going to be applicable. And I'm going to teach you in a way that you're going to think, oh, well, that's why this happens or that happens. So we really want to make it practical. We're going to look at an assessment of how you look at your digestive system to see if it's working properly. We're going to look at the concept of transit time. And we'll share what that is. How long does it actually take for food to go from one end to the other? We're going to talk about how important it is to have a pre-meal de-stress practices and the importance of chewing and why these things are important. I'm sure you've heard it's important to relax and take a few deep breaths and say grace before meals and chew your meal. But until you really get it and understand what's happening physiologically, you may not take it seriously. And then we're going to give you an overview of something that's called the 4R process for healing your digestion. And we're going to mostly work on the first R, which is the remove R. And I'll tell you what that is, all about that in a little bit. And part of that is going to be showing you what an elimination diet is. And we're going to overview that for you as well. Let's look at, does your digestion need help? There's the obvious signs, and then there's the not so obvious signs. And we're all pretty clear, when we're in distress, when we've got bloating or gas or flatulence, burping, pain, hemorrhoids, irritable bowel, diarrhea, constipation, Crohn's disease, diverticulitis, colitis. If you've been diagnosed with any of those or you're experiencing any of those, it's pretty obvious that your gut's involved, right? That's pretty obvious. But what about the not so obvious? What about some of the symptoms that you might be experiencing or conditions that you've been diagnosed with that to you it's not real obvious? So acne, did you know acne can be related? And a lot of other skin things, acne, eczema, psoriasis. What about the brain fog and the inability to hold attention and keep your memory working? Depression and anxiety can be linked to digestion and joint pain. Frequent illness, like poor immune function, that can be linked to digestive illness. And as we learn how it works, I'm going to be pulling these things back in. So this is my overview, the quick pass overview, to get your attention and say, wait a minute, maybe I do have digestive issues. And maybe some of my family members have digestive issues, even though it's not obvious. We're going to look at things like hormone swings and thyroid imbalance. That's one of the key things in thyroid, especially autoimmune thyroid, is digestive. And there's a lot of reasons for that, and we'll talk about why. Headaches, very common. Migraine headaches, cluster headaches, different kinds of headaches can be related to poor digestive function. Autoimmune diseases, like a lot of them, like Sjogren's and lupus and rheumatoid arthritis, MS even. Allergies, like food allergies and also inhalant allergies, like the sneezy kind of things. ADD, attention deficit disorder, with or without the hyperactivity. Asthma, fatigue, and fibromyalgia. And we don't always think about digestion when we hear about these particular conditions. But as we go through the program, it's going to be really clear why these conditions are related to poor digestion. Okay? So, does your digestion need help? Go ahead and, jot down on your paper, yeah, my digestion needs help. And if you're having any of these symptoms, you can jot them down. So let's just look at some digestion recovery stories. What do I mean by that? Well, the people who were suffering from digestive issues that maybe didn't really relate it to digestion until we fixed the digestion and the symptoms went away. And my very first digestion recovery story is me. When I was back in my 20s, I was pretty, not the way I am right now. I wasn't as health conscious. I wasn't health conscious at all. Let's just be real. And I was not really taking good care of myself. I was drinking and I was staying up late. I still do that. But I was eating, overeating and eating really rich foods. And I just wasn't really on the ball as far as taking care of myself. And I started to develop symptoms like the inability to stay awake unless I dosed myself with, 20 cups of black tea every day. And the inability to really focus, having brain fog, and I really couldn't focus all that well. And I had things like sinus issues where my sinuses are constantly dripping and dripping down into my throat. And it's, this is embarrassing, but I was, you know, with a partner, and he said, you know, I hate to tell you this, but your breath is really foul. And it turned out it was because I had this drip from my nose of all this kind of, you know, foul mucus that was dripping into my throat, and it didn't make me real attractive. And I was always struggling with my weight. I never was heavy, but I was always trying to work really hard to keep myself thin. And so it wasn't until, I didn't relate any of this to digestion, so it wasn't until I started to develop ulcers. Oh, and I had headaches. I forgot about that. And I was taking a lot of aspirin for the headaches. And it wasn't until I started to develop burning in my gut that the doctors tied it to digestion. But they didn't tie any of the other symptoms. I had to later learn about that to tie it. But here's the deal. I went and had all the testing done, and they said, we don't have an ulcer. We don't know what's wrong with you. Just take ulcer medication. And I said, there's got to be a better way. How many of you have been in that situation, right, where you just, it doesn't make sense. The doctor's saying, you don't have this, but here's the medication. And you say, I want another way. And then you jump in, and that's why you're here, is because you've looked for another way. Well, I was looking for another way, and he didn't have it, so I left searching for another way. And as I discovered what was going on with my gut and healed that, and found out that I also had an overgrowth of candida and some other funguses and healed that, all the other symptoms started to go away. I cleansed, cleaned out, and the other symptoms went away. And I don't have any of those symptoms anymore. And I don't need any caffeine to keep me going, and I can stay up 24 hours without caffeine, full of energy and full of health. So that was my digestion recovery story. And so I was so enthralled by that and so outraged that there wasn't a solution in medicine, I decided I'm quitting my job and I'm going back to school and I'm going to learn it. So I did, and I went to 4 years of chiropractic school. I did a 2-year nutrition program, did a 2-year herbal medicine program. I did a 2-year acupuncture program. And I put all this together, and then I trained with the Institute of Heart Rate Math. And that wasn't a 2-year program. That was a 5-day program intensive. And I learned how to put all this together, and that's why I'm here, because I'm dedicated to not having people be given the pat on the back and say, here, just go take this medication, but we don't know what's wrong with you. And that's why we're here. Well, I want to tell you a couple of other cases of people that I worked with. And these were people I worked with early in my practice. And I remember somebody coming in, and she had something called psoriatic arthritis. Now, I, you know, was relatively new in practice, so I didn't have like a whole host of experience with psoriatic arthritis. But I knew the underlying mechanism of psoriatic arthritis, and I knew how to work with people to heal the digestion, get their alkaline diet going, get them their inflammation down. And I worked with this woman, and we put her on a gut healing protocol, and we got rid of her allergy foods, a lot of the stuff I'm going to share with you. And lo and behold, the skin starts clearing. If you see this picture here in the middle, you'll see this like scaly kind of patches on the hands, and then very red and inflamed and thickened joints. So psoriatic arthritis is a condition where there's a combination of psoriasis, which is a skin issue, with inflammation in the joints. And it's generally considered an autoimmune disease, which means the body's attacking itself. And what I've come to learn and teach to my practitioners and learned from my mentors is that anytime you have an autoimmune disease, you've got to look to the gut. You've got to look to healing the gut. So I put her on protocols similar to what we're going to share throughout this program, and lo and behold, her psoriatic arthritis cleared up. Okay? So that's another case. The third case is a case of someone who came into me, a male executive, very, very aggressive, very, considered one of those aggressive guys at work, but he really, that was a front, because when I was with him and he was concerned about his health, he was very vulnerable and very sensitive. And we talked about what might be causing these MS-like symptoms, and that's why there's a picture of the brain with those little white spots are considered plaque. And in MS, that's what we look at when you do an MRI of the head. You're looking for these little white plaques. And you're saying, well, what does that have to do with my digestion? It has to do everything. It's another autoimmune disease. So again, I looked at the guy's diet. I looked at, you know, he was an executive. He was going to a lot of business dinners. He was living the high road, right? He was eating the rich food and drinking the alcohol, and under a lot of stress. And so I worked with him to calm all those things down, get his digestion calmed down. And he, for the first time, started walking without a limp. And I remember he came to me. It was a Christmas time when I first started working to him. It was sometime in December. And he came to me in for a visit. We talked. I got him. He did some hands-on therapy. But he went out. He was going to go out with his daughter to go Christmas shopping. He was dreading it because he's like, oh, I don't know. I'm not going to be able to do this. I'm going to be sitting on the bench the whole time. And the next time I saw him a couple of weeks later, he said, oh, my God, I'm so thrilled that my feet didn't get tired. I didn't lose sensation. I wasn't limping. I actually was able to enjoy it, and it was really great. So thank you. And he was real dedicated to keeping his digestion working, to getting his inflammation down. These are the kinds of things that are possible, and we don't even relate them to the gut. I didn't relate my symptoms to the gut until I had a gut symptom, right? But none of these people really had overt or major gut symptoms. They weren't their chief complaint. And then as we dug, we realized, yeah, they did have some problems, you know, antibiotic use and a lot of the risk factors that we'll talk about. So those are the kinds of things that don't just think, oh, I don't know why I'm here. I just signed up because I like you. No, if you have any kind of symptoms at all, fatigue, joint pain, all those things I listed before, autoimmune disease, skin issues, you're in the right place because we're going to help you to get on the path to get your digestion working. Because if you don't have the digestion working, no matter what you do to fix the rest of your body, it's not going to be a long-lived solution. You may get some temporary relief by taking the right herbs or taking the right nutrients. It's not going to be a long-lived solution. So I just thought I'd share that just so that you'd be inspired to know that, wow, okay, this can be something that is going to work for me and help me. So let's take a look at how digestion influences other parts of the body. Well, number one, if your digestion isn't working properly, you are going to have nutritional deficiencies. Your body's not going to be able to absorb all the nutrition in the food. Maybe you'll have protein insufficiencies and your body won't be able to create the structures, create the enzymes. And it's kind of a proposition that keeps making itself worse because if you don't have enough protein because you're not absorbing the protein, then you're not going to be able to digest well because you need enzymes, which are protein, to digest. So there's just, it's like this vicious cycle that the gift that keeps on giving, only negative. It's the syndrome that keeps on taking. So you get nutritional deficiencies and that can affect you throughout the body, right? Hormone imbalances, it can affect your brain, it can affect your skin, your urinary tract. The other thing that poor digestion can cause inflammation in the body. So the digestive, think about the digestive tract as this tube that goes from your mouth to your anus. The digestive tract is not inside your body, it's outside your body. And people say, what? How could the digestion be outside my body? It's actually your digestion has a lining that's keeping the food that you take in from going into the internal part of your body. So it's just really a tube. It's got an opening at the top and an opening at the bottom. And then it's got little spaces in between the cells where only fully digested foods are supposed to enter in. But when we do things that irritate and aggravate the digestion, that we'll talk about in a little bit, what happens is that gut lining gets irritated and aggravated. And you start to take in things into the digestive tract that they don't belong there. And you end up with this systemic inflammatory condition when things are getting into the bloodstream and then the body tries to attack. So you get inflammation that can affect everywhere. And the same thing causes toxic absorption. So the toxins that are supposed to just be eliminated and the toxins not only that you take in but the toxins that you produce metabolically and that your gut bugs produce, they're not supposed to filter into your bloodstream. They're supposed to go out the other end. So toxin absorption ends up causing a strain on the system and can cause damage to other parts of the body. It can cause immune stress, again, because these things that don't belong in the bloodstream get in, and then the immune system has to start this all-scale attack. And when you're attacking things that are not dangerous, you don't get to be as good. You get tired out and don't get to attack the stuff that is dangerous. So we get a lot of people who have low tolerance for illnesses, and they catch everything that goes around. It could be as a result of the gut. Hormone imbalances. Thyroid is particularly sensitive to these toxins and the inflammation and food antigens and cross-reactivity, and we'll go more into that later. So hormone imbalances are very common. Also, the gut is a source of stress. When you've got things going on in the gut, malabsorption and you know, critters that don't belong there, that's a stress on your body, which creates a stress on your adrenals. And when your adrenals are stressed, all of the other steroid hormones are affected. What does that mean? Well, things like progesterone, estrogen, testosterone, DHEA, hormones that we need. And when they're low, we create uncomfortable symptoms. So that's how the gut can lead to hormone imbalances. And finally, brain and neurotransmitter imbalances. And again, part of it is because of the toxins and the inflammation. Part of it is because of the nutrient imbalances. And part of it is that the gut actually produces neurotransmitters. And those can disrupt the harmony of the brain. There's a big connection between the brain and the gut and the way that they affect each other. And you know how you say you have a gut feeling? Well, those feelings, you know, you don't just have the neurotransmissions and the emotions that get stemmed and the thoughts that get stemmed in the brain. They can get stemmed in your gut. So all of these reasons that the digestion has influence on the rest of the body. So let's, in a nutshell, what is your digestive tract's job? It's to take nutrients from the foods you eat so that the cells of your body can use them. So the nutrients come in and they go into the bloodstream and it fuels the body for use. That's a simple, that's all it is. Very simple process. But it's simple, yet it's a little bit more complex. So there's three main functions of the digestive system. One is digestion, right? It breaks down the food into molecules your body can use. Simple as that. You eat a piece of celery, your body needs to take out all the nutrients from that celery, make it something that you can use. And then the next part is absorption. Those molecules that your body can use, the amino acids and the nutrients, the minerals, the vitamins, they need to get absorbed into the bloodstream and carried through the body. So digestion, absorption, and then finally elimination. Celery is a really good example because there's a lot to eliminate with celery. It's got a lot of stringy fibers that your body can't break down. It's just cellulose. And your body needs to be able to eliminate that rather than allowing it to build up and be food for intestinal organisms that are not so good. So that's the main functions of your digestion. And here's what your digestion looks like. On this picture, it starts with the mouth, right? Because that's where the food enters. In the mouth. The food gets into the mouth, the teeth chew it, and it's the only place in your body where efficient mechanical digestion occurs, the breakdown physically of the particles. So you either have to chew it or blend it, or it's going to come out the way it went in. And then it goes down into the pharynx, which is the throat area, and then into the esophagus, and down into the stomach. So before I go down through that and explain the functions of those things, I just want to really reiterate, the mouth is super important and chewing is really important, but there's one piece that happens before the mouth, and that's your mind. What are you thinking when you sit down to have that meal? Are you in a stress mode or a relaxed mode when you sit down to have that meal? And that's going to determine how well you digest your food. So really when we talk about the digestive tract, it's not necessarily mouth to anus, although that's the route the food takes. But the process of digestion is occurring in the mind. So it's mind to anus. So we go down this long tube called the esophagus, and we'll go into more detail about that when we do our next module, which is the upper GI. So it's basically transports, right? You swallow, it goes down the esophagus and dumps into the stomach. And the stomach is where we get the beginning of protein absorption. We have hydrochloric acid and all that. And again, we'll go through the details of that and what can go wrong and how you can support your stomach health in the second part next week. You've got your liver and your gallbladder, and your liver makes bile to help with fat absorption. We'll go through that as well. And it gets dumped into a part of the small intestine called the duodenum, which is right at the top part. And the small intestine is this 22 foot, it's small because it's not because it's short, it's because it's narrow. It's a narrow tube that's coiled around itself. And it has three parts, the duodenum, and the duodenum is where digestion occurs, that breakdown, and the jejunum, and that's where most of the absorption occurs, and then the ileum, which is where just the last bit of the absorption happens and wastes start to get extracted, and that's also where B12 absorption happens in that very last part. So we'll talk more about that as we go through the individual parts. So just want to give you an overview, and then we go into the large intestine. And then from the large intestine, it's a smaller tube, maybe 10 to 12 feet or 8 to 12 feet, depending on the size of the person. A little bit thicker, rounder, and that's where the wastes get, the last of the water gets extracted, a few of the little minerals get extracted there. And for the most part, it's just, you know, absorbing, taking this kind of liquidy, smoothie-like consistency mass and turning it into the stool, which is supposed to be well-formed. And we'll talk about that more when we get there. So we go around this large intestine, comes out through the sigmoid colon, which is S-shaped, and then into the rectum, and then out the anus. We have the rectum as a storage place. So we don't want to have to go to the bathroom every time something starts to move in there, so the rectum can hold the feces, and you can hold that so that you can go and eliminate several times a day instead of continually all day long. But when things go wrong, like diarrhea or increased transit time, which we'll talk about in a bit, then you do need to be near a bathroom all the time because your body's not holding on to things. So that's just basically the digestive tract in a nutshell. And we'll be going through each and every part in way more detail as we go through the course. So I just want to make sure you understand there's four real stages of food processing. There's ingestion, which is eating, taking in the nutrients, taking in the food, actually, and that's in the mouth, mainly, right? The mouth is where it takes it in. Now, there are cases when people are digestively impaired and they're in the hospital and they have a tube, a feeding tube, so that can go right into their stomach or right into their jejunum. Then there's digestion, which is the physical and chemical breakdown of the complex organic molecules into smaller parts. Well, where does that happen? Well, the mouth, because we've got teeth, and we've also got a little bit of salivary amylase to break it down. It happens in the stomach. The stomach churns it, and then it secretes pepsin and hydrochloric acid to start the protein breakdown. Then there's the pancreas, which produces the enzymes that get shot into the duodenum, and the duodenum where the digestion actually happens. And then the liver and the gallbladder, which squirt out bile to help with fat digestion. So there's the main components of the digestive part of food processing. Then there's the absorption, which is pulling the digested molecules into the bloodstream for distribution throughout to all the rest of the system. And that's main focus is the jejunum, although there is a little bit of that happens in the large intestine. And then the main focus of elimination is the large intestine. Okay, so this is just an overview of the process. So I like to look at it as two kinds of digestion to really reiterate the importance of your teeth, which a lot of us forget about. We just like put the food in our mouth, chew, 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 and swallow, and then we wonder why there's bits of food coming out the other end or maybe there's an irritable bowel. So there's two kinds of digestion, mechanical and chemical. Mechanical is grinding the food into small pieces. Mechanical can happen in your mouth by your teeth. It can happen in your blender or food processor. And it can also happen to a very limited extent in the stomach. The stomach will take what you've chewed and it kind of churns it around like a washing machine. And so there's some more breakdown that happens there. But if there's big old pieces, the stomach doesn't have teeth, so it can't really break those down. And then there's the chemical, which is where you take large food molecules and you break them down into small food molecules by enzymes. And digestion can happen without enzymes. People think that you can't digest without enzymes. It's just very, very slow without enzymes. Enzymes catalyze. They improve the rate at which the breakdown occurs. Okay? Makes sense? Okay. So let's talk about some of the phases of digestion. And this is getting a little more geeky than you might want, and these writing on here is very small. I just wanted you to see the overall look of where all these parts were. Okay? The cephalic phase is the mind part. That's where you're thinking about food and you're smelling the food, and that's stimulating the gastric juices to start. Then the esophageal phase, which is where the food is going from the mouth down through the tube and into the stomach. The gastric phase, where the food is in the stomach, and then the intestinal phase. So those are the main parts. So if you ever hear these things talked about, that's what that is. No need to memorize it, just to understand that there's different places that things happen. And this is just a bird's eye view of what happens. I just really like this. It's like equating the digestion to a factory. And it's a picture of a guy with the hamburger holding it up on a pair of tongs and putting it into the teeth, which are, you know, being held together by these guys, you know, squirting these little bottles and vials of stuff into the food in the mouth and a little bit into the stomach. And then more vials that are squirting little things in there. You know, it's, these are what's helping you to digest. And then the tubes that it goes through. And then the collecting that at the bottom where things are kind of sitting there and solidifying. And then plop out in the toilet. All right. It's a cool little diagram. I just thought it was really fun. So let's just talk a little bit about what can go wrong with the digestion. And there's different things that can go wrong in different places. And as we progress through the course, we'll be talking about the various things and then what you can do about each of them. So you might have heard the term leaky gut. No, it's not a matter of food coming out your belly button. And no, it's not a matter about a leaky faucet coming out of your belly button, although it's a very good graphic. You get an idea. Basically, leaky gut means that your gut is not keeping the things out of the bloodstream that it needs to. It's not doing a real good job of filtering it. And when we look at the small intestine in our third part, where we're going to go in and do a digestive repair, I give you little diagrams so you can actually see what's going on in there. But you actually have all these little finger-like projections in your small intestine that wave the food through and then absorb what it needs to absorb from it. Absorb the nutrients and wave the rest of the waste products through. So some of the things that can go wrong, you can maybe not make enough stomach acid. So you can't really efficiently break down protein and minerals. Maybe you don't make enough bile, or your gallbladder is congested and stony, full of stones, and not squirting out the bile the way it needs to. And then you don't absorb your fat real well. And maybe you have this leaky gut, inflammation in your small intestine, and you're not absorbing nutrients properly. And worse, if you're absorbing things you shouldn't be absorbing, and you're getting a lot of inflammation and irritation there. And maybe you pass things through you too fast and you have diarrhea, or maybe they go through you too slow and you've got constipation. And maybe it's worse than that, and you've got inflammation in the gut. Inflammation in these little pockets, if you see on this large intestine picture, there are these little pockets, those are the diverticuli. And these diverticuli can get clogged and inflamed. And you can have a condition called diverticulitis. And we'll talk about that more when we get into that part of the program. Okay? So, and then you can have colitis or ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease. A lot of things can go wrong with the gut. I might have missed, stomach, you can have ulcers. You can have gastritis, which is an inflammation in the gut. So, when you hear something that has the word itis on it, you know that that's an inflammation. So, gastritis would be inflammation of the stomach. Hepatitis is related to the liver, so inflammation in the liver. Okay? Colitis, inflammation in the colon. Right, you get it. Encephalitis, inflammation in the brain. All of these things are inflammation, and inflammation is a big part of why the digestion sometimes doesn't work right. So let's look at how you can assess the functioning of your digestive tract. I like to use symptoms. There's a series of symptoms that might point to the problem being in the stomach or the problem being in the large intestine or the small intestine. We have an online assessment, and I'm going to give you access to that so you can actually get your own score and see where your digestion is at. There's something called transit time, and I'm actually going to teach you how to measure your transit time. That's how fast does the food take to go from the mouth to the anus. And it really should be somewhere between 18 and 24 hours. If yours takes longer, then food is in for too long, and you're going to be absorbing too many toxins back into your system instead of eliminating them as they should. If it goes through you too fast, you're not going to be able to absorb all the nutrition. You might have diarrhea, maybe not, but you may have diarrhea and you're just pooping away all the great food that you took in. We look at labs, and there's specific markers in just a general blood test, but also you can do stool analysis and just really look to see what kind of critters, what kind of bugs are in there, and how the digestive tract's working. We can look at your body for physical signs of nutrient deficiencies. You can look at your fingernails, and if you have really cracked and brittle fingernails, or your skin is all dried and shriveled up, there's signs of nutrient malabsorption, and there's a series of those. You can have inflammation and allergic reactions, and that can be problematic. And you can have symptoms outside the digestive tract. So it's really important to see the integrity of your skin, your gums, your nails, your lips, your tongue, your joints, your bones, your brain. So that's what you do for an assessment to see, do I have problems? And I have a questionnaire that I'm going to give you at the end so that you can do it, see if this applies to you. But the transit time, how long does it take to go from mouth to anus? Like I said, it should be between 18 and 24 hours. And you can test it. You can get yourself some activated charcoal, and you can swallow a bunch of them, you know, six capsules or tablets, and then you wait. And you watch to see what comes out the other end. How long is it before you see the black of the charcoal coming out the other end? If it's too short, if it's like you start to see it at 12 hours, you know that things are going through you too quickly. So if the charcoal went through you that quickly, that's what's happening with the nutrients, and you're not going to absorb them all. And if it takes 30 hours before you start to see the charcoal coming out, that's too long. You're reabsorbing toxins, and you might end up being constipated. And we have the exact description of how to do that. I think it's in this part of the program on the website. And this is just going back to how important this has always been. It's not something new. Hippocrates, who's considered the father of modern medicine, he was urging his citizens that he wanted them to have large, bulky stools after every meal. And that's really how it should be. If you have a decent-sized meal, you should be pooping within a half an hour of that meal because you are stimulating movement through it. Now, you're not going to be pooping out what you just took in or what you took in, you know, that day or 6 hours ago. It's what you took in 18 to 24 hours ago, right? So it's this nice, well-oiled machine. But the other piece that's so important that I want you to understand, it's not just the mechanics of the digestion. It's the psychology of digestion. It begins in your head and your heart, not in your gut. So if you're under stress, and you're feeling like you're watching the news and you're getting all bent out of shape about the latest hurricane or murder or whatever, you are going to upset your digestion because the natural response to stress is the body shuts down digestion. Did you know that? When you're sitting there chomping away at dinner and you're yelling at your kid, you're not digesting your food real well, and you're leaving yourself open to lots of digestive illnesses. So the digestion, when you're in fight-flight mode, turns off, shuts down the sphincters, which are the valves between the different sections, which means things can't move properly from one place to the other. It lowers the secretions in the digestive tract, which means you're not going to have a nice thick mucous membrane protection. You're not going to have enough stomach acid or digestive enzymes. And things just don't move through. So that's a really big piece of it, is getting out of stress mode. Okay, so breathing. So let me teach you the pre-meal routine. So what I want you to do before every meal, and you could do this now, is put your right hand over your heart, your left hand over your belly, and I want you to just stop. Whatever you're doing, stop. If you're reading the paper, stop. If you're yelling at your kid, stop. Before you put the food into your mouth, stop. You just stop. And you just close your eyes or keep them open, and you take some deep breaths. And you just really emphasize and put your attention on a deep feeling of appreciation for the food you have in front of you. Not everybody gets the privilege of sitting in front of a perfectly formed meal every day. And we have that privilege. And the food is beautiful, it's full of color, it's full of nutrition, and you honor that food. And then you eat. 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, however long you want to take on it. Makes all the difference in the world for your digestion. In my opinion, it's a must. If you're not having good digestion and you're not doing this, you need to start now. Now, okay? So here's how stress affects the gut. The Institute of Heart Math measures something called secretory IgA. Secretory IgA is secreted into your saliva, and it's an antibody that lines all the mucous membranes in your body. So lines your digestion, lines your respiratory tract, your lungs. And when you are under stress, the secretory IgA secretion goes down. That's this line way below the line. When you go into anger, that's where your secretory IgA goes. When you go into care, the secretory IgA goes up and then just stays up and goes up and is really improving the protection that you have in your gut. So, this is the pre-meal ritual. Stop, look, tune into your heart, breathe fully and deeply, feel sincere appreciation, and do this every time you put food into your body. Every time, don't miss. Focus on this alone, and you will start to see changes in your digestion. I promise you. So chewing, I'm going to reiterate, only your mouth has teeth, and the other unchewed food comes out the other end perfectly intact, which means you're not extracting all the nutrients from it. The other thing that you don't do when you don't chew properly is you don't allow for the breakdown in the mouth. There's some salivary amylase, there's even a little bit of salivary lipase, very small. And you want to get those things going in your mouth, and amylase will digest starches and lipase digest fat. Without chewing, you're going to eat more quickly, and you're going to eat too much because you're just bolting it down, and you don't even realize you're full. Not chewing properly can lead to acid reflux, which, well, how many people did we say? Let me look at my notes. 56 million people have acid reflux, and much of it can be stopped by chewing, doing the pre-meal ritual, and then some other nutrients and herbs that we can talk about. Poorly chewed food can lead to flatulence, indigestion, heartburn, gas, and IBS because the bugs get it. So let's talk about the 4-R process. And we're going to start with the top one, which is remove. And throughout the program, we're going to go through replace, reinoculate, and repair. And I'll explain those to you when we get there. So we're going to start with remove. Okay? This is a process that one of my mentors, Jeffrey Bland, popularized. We first learned about this. It was a brilliant way of putting all the different things we know are going to help your digestion. So there's foods that can hurt your gut. They can damage that delicate mucous membrane that lines and protects and cause irritation to the cell layers underneath that. And when that gets damaged, you've got to be doing things to put it back in place. These foods can also cause an irritation to the tight junctions, which they're called, between the cells. And they become not so tight junctions. They become leaky. It's called increased gut permeability. Slang term is leaky gut. And I know people who hear leaky gut, they're like, what the heck? Is that like food is dripping out of my belly button? No. It's their food is leaking from the lining, the inside of it, into the bloodstream. So things that can hurt, gluten. Gluten is a protein found in wheat. Most of you have heard me speak about gluten before. It's mandatory to get off of gluten if you want to heal your gut. Mandatory. Gluten is glue-like. It can plug up those villi. It can also cause inflammation in those villi and in the spaces in between and lead to leaky gut, even if you don't have celiac disease. Even if the doctor tested you for celiac and you don't have it, you can have a nonspecific, non-celiac gluten sensitivity. Dairy is another one. It contains a protein called casein. Casein is like glue. Again, it can gum up the absorptive mechanisms. It also can get into your bloodstream and cause mucus and inflammation. Sugar is damaging. Sugar actually feeds the bugs that live in your gut that you don't really want to live there. And just as an aside, so what is your microflora? Your flora is those set of organisms that live in your gut that are doing you good. They're producing vitamins. They're helping to repair the lining. They're helping you to absorb your nutrients. They're good for you. Okay? And when you take too much sugar, you feed the not-so-good guys. We all have good guys and bad guys in our gut all the time. And they get into battles. And when you eat too much sugar, you make the ones that you don't want there stronger. You create an environment where they grow. And when they grow, they crowd out your good guys, your protectors. And then you get the bloaty and the gas and all sorts of things. We'll be talking about a variety of different syndromes caused by sugar. And in the third part of the program, when we start your 30-day metabolic digestive repair process, we're going to talk about how you can starve away some of these critters that live there. Also, refined carbohydrates, they get converted to. They get converted to the sugar. And there's process, and we'll talk about it later on, the specific carbohydrate diet or the GAPS diet, and then the FODMAP diet. And these are where we've identified specific sugars and specific people who are sensitive to them. And we'll talk more about that if that's something you need to do. It's not something that the majority of people need to do, but if you do, it's important to know about it. Sugar alcohol is, in some cases, people who are sensitive to FODMAPs are going to have sugar alcohol problems, and we shouldn't have that taken in. And in general, I recommend that you don't take too much. Sugar alcohols are things like xylitol and erythritol and mannitol and sorbitol. I don't recommend mannitol and sorbitol much at all, but in some cases, xylitol can be helpful for teeth. The dentists are telling people to do it, so you just have to see. A lot of people get diarrhea badly from it. Most people don't get diarrhea from erythritol, but most people do get it from the xylitol in decent quantities. You need to be off of foods that you're allergic to, because allergies cause inflammation. And if you've got inflammation going on, you're going to hurt your gut. Caffeine and alcohol are definitely, and trans fats being those fats that have been altered in structure, either mechanically or through heat and processing, they change structure and they become trans form instead of the cis form. And the trans form of fats is actually bent in a way that your body's not used to, and it can cause damage to your digestive tract as well as to your blood vessel walls. Processed meats have nitrites and all kinds of preservatives in them, so those can be damaging. In some people, nightshades are problematic. What's that? That's tomatoes, potatoes, eggplant, peppers. But not everybody, and not even a majority. But if that's you, and you're doing everything else right, and you're not getting the results, it could be a nightshade problem. Then there's lectins, and lectins are particular markers in the chemistry of grains and beans and dairy. And again, it's in some people. When in doubt, leave it out, at least during the elimination phase. I'm a real big fan of simplifying down to very little and then gradually adding things in to see, not adding back trans fats and alcohol and caffeine, mind you, but I mean certain subgroups of foods. That some people have problems with nightshades. Some people have problems with sulfur-containing foods. Some people have problems with oxalates, and it has to do with their particular biochemistry. And then in some people, the FODMAPs, and that stands for, yeah, you ready? It's a big one. Fructose, oligosaccharides, disaccharide, monosaccharides, and polyols. Phew! It's a big, long list, okay? And there are specific foods that some people have problems with because their gut bacteria is living off of it and thriving off of it, and you're getting the not-so-good stuff. Okay, and we'll talk more about that when we get into the intestine. Okay, so those are some of the things. So the hot dogs, not so good. The beer and french fries, not so good. Some of these things you might be able to get away with every now and then once your gut's healed. But while you're in the healing stage, strictness is definitely in order. Okay, so remove. What are we going to remove? That's the R that we're working on today. The R is for removing foods that hurt your gut, which I just gave you a list of. Medications, like over-the-counters, like NSAIDs, let me tell you a little bit about the medications. The medications that are said to have the most damaging effect on the gut are non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. That's those things we take over-the-counter for pain relief and headaches and all. And antacids. People take antacids because they have burning in their stomach and it turns down the stomach acid. But the majority of people have low stomach acid. So antacids are actually making their digestion worse. Okay, so those are two main categories of drugs, and there are others that will negatively affect your gut. And the other things that we want to remove are candida, parasites, and bacteria. So of the remove, we're going to start with everything on here except the candida, parasites, and bacteria. We're not going to do anything to directly remove those. We're going to wait until the third part of the module when we get into all the procedures for doing that. But let me just tell you, if you follow an elimination diet, avoid the sugars, avoid the foods that hurt your gut that I listed on the previous page, this one, you avoid these guys, and you get off of the common allergens and then see which ones you're sensitive to. You get off of all the foods you know you're sensitive to. All of that is going to naturally allow those levels of candida, parasite, and other infections to go down. And then when we get to that part of the module, we're going to go ahead and do a specific 30-day process for healing it and getting the rest of it. Okay, so that's remove. The elimination diet is very simple. It's just a matter of identifying common allergens and known allergens and removing them from the diet, along with foods you eat frequently, you crave, or you know you don't digest well, because these are the foods that can be creating problems for you. So we get down to a very elementary diet, very simple diet that you can do for a while, experience pleasure and comfort, and then you can move on. Okay, and then we can add things back in. So there's two phases, elimination and provocation. Right now, we're just going to talk to you about elimination. So eliminate the common allergens, gluten, dairy, egg, peanuts, corn, and soy. Any allergies you know about, the foods you eat frequently and crave, okay? And you just do this temporarily to see how you feel, and then you can test them back. And then foods you know you don't digest well. Elimination provocation, and again, we'll go more into detail on it later, is you identify the common food allergies, you remove them from the diet for an adequate time, and that could be 4 days, it could be 4 weeks, it could be 4 months. So it's going to depend, and you get to judge that. And then you reintroduce them in systematic manner in high doses. So you don't want to just give a little dot of it, because the symptoms it creates may go undetected. You want to really do large amounts so it's obvious if you're having a problem. If you're not having a problem, it's not going to, no matter how much you eat, it's not going to cause a problem unless you overeat, right? We're not telling you to overeat and stuff yourself. And then you just be a detective about how you feel, what old symptoms are coming out, and immediately to 2 days out. So it's not just like you can say, okay, I'm going to add a new food for breakfast, a new one for lunch, a new one for dinner. And then if you have a problem the next morning, you can have a delayed hypersensitivity to something you ate before. Get it? So those are the things to consider. And we go through a lot more detail of that in other programs that we do. Here's the thing you need to know, is when you start to remove your allergens, you could feel sick as a dog the first few days, especially if you go off the allergens, sugar, and stimulants all at the same time. You could feel sick as a dog because your body was relying on those for stimulation. You have an addiction there. Your body was getting an endorphin rush from those foods. So as your body's eliminating and detoxing, you may not feel good. And it's a good idea to just take it easy on yourself and rest and relax. So we're going to begin to heal your gut. What do we need to do that? Well, I like to get people on some daily green drinks because it provides gut-soothing chlorophyll. Now, these green drinks can be any sort of green drink you want. We'll talk about those kinds. It's a good source of magnesium, which is really important for digestion. They're loaded with minerals, which help your digestion heal and help you to produce your enzymes and keep your lining nice and plump. They're smooth and easy on the gut. Like instead of chewing a salad and risking not chewing it all the way and having that be irritating to your gut, you're blending them. So we're going to incorporate in our 30-day program some blending. Not exclusively blending for 30 days unless you want to. That's not mandatory. But we're going to be doing some blending. Okay? And it can be whatever it takes for you. Green juice, where you don't have the fiber. And that's usually recommended for people who have some really serious inflammatory bowel disease, because the fiber just is not sitting well. Blended green drinks made from raw veggies, and that could be smoothies and have a little bit of fruit in it, or the savory kinds. You can make green soups. One of my favorite things to do is steam up a bunch of vegetables and blend it up on a cold winter day with the water and then with some really good gut-healing herbs. And you can have powdered drink mixes. I just came back from a trip, and during my trip I didn't have my blender with me. I could have brought it, but I didn't want to have to deal with having to check my luggage, so I didn't. And I was going to be in a hotel, and I just felt like, okay, I'm just going to use my powdered grain mix. And I took a jar with me and I shook things up and I bought water and I had a powdered grain drink. So mix it up. Find out what works for you. Just because I say you should be working up to a quart or more, if you find that if you take more than 24 ounces, you feel weird, you don't like the feeling, well then back it off. Your body's telling you things. Not everybody can do it. And that's why when we're together, we're going to have a lot of opportunity to coach. Like, hey, I tried this thing you said, and this is what happened. It wasn't what I expected. Ah, so I can dig with you and help you to figure out why. So daily grain drinks are important. The picture over here is my son, who's on the far left. That was when he was, I think, 10 years old or 11. He's 16 now, so he's a lot taller than that. He's a lot taller than me. And that's him. And they were wearing their green smoothie mustaches and posed for the picture for me. And I was just so thrilled. And these guys are 12, and they were thrilled that they could get all those veggies in a green smoothie. And this guy is 3 years younger than him, so he must have been 7 at the time. And he would come over to my house, lives next door, all the time, and ask me to make him a smoothie. And he knew after a while. I told him that I was putting spinach in his strawberry smoothie, and it was okay with him. This is something I'd like you to get started on right now. It's very easy. It's 32 ounces of water, the juice of a lemon or a lime, 2 drops of peppermint oil, 2 drops lemon oil. And I like to put it in a glass jar and just shake her up and drink it. There's something about the peppermint, the menthol in there and some of the other alkaloids, and the limonene that's in the lemon that helps to support the body's detoxification. Limonene is important for the liver detox. It's one of those factors that helps improve the phase 2 liver detox. But also it helps to just like open your digestive tract up. You know, you've been sleeping all night. You've been laying flat. There hasn't been a lot of movement. There can be stagnation. We want to be able to push things through so you get rid of the debris from yesterday and start afresh with debris from today. So this is what I call my daily AM gut rejuvenator. 32 ounces of pure water, a lemon, 2 drops peppermint oil, and 2 drops lemon oil. And people ask me, well, I don't have peppermint, I have spearmint. That's fine too. I don't have lemon, I have orange, or I have lime or something like that, tangerine. It's okay, the citrus, okay? Lemon and orange tend to have the most limonene, but all of them have the limonene, so go for it. And the oil comes from the skin, and that's where the oil is, and that's where the essential components like limonene are. Okay, so that's what I want you to do in the morning. So we've come through, we're coming to the end, and then we'll have questions. And I want you to do some things. This is your homework for the week, so to speak. Every week we're going to have an action plan. This week's action plan is complete the online assessment. And then the second part is add a daily AM gut rejuvenator before any food in the morning. Okay? So you want to, before you eat, do a daily AM gut. You may start with 8 ounces because that's all you can do. Work up to a quart. Same thing with the green drinks, green smoothies, blended greens. Some of you are already doing it, some not. And it's okay if you have an irritated gut to have a blended green drink from cooked foods in the morning, cooked vegetables, because sometimes we have to go with cooked while we're healing the gut because the fiber is like sandpaper. So it's okay to wake up and have a nice warm bowl. Instead of oatmeal, you have a warm bowl of blended vegetable soup. And you make it all delicious and put a lot of herbs in there, which we'll teach you through the program. And then you do the pre-meal ritual, okay? You just stop, you look, you breathe, and you give thanks for your food and your life. And then finally, begin to eliminate the foods that hurt your gut. What's coming up? So this was part one, and we went through the overview, we went through some basics, we gave you a nice action plan to get you started on healing your gut. Part two is going to be starting at the top, mind, mouth, and stomach. We're going to go through the physiology of those things, what goes wrong, and what you can do about it. How are you going to improve your stomach acid production? What can you take? Do you take stomach acid? Do you not take stomach acid? And how do you optimize that? Part three, we're going to look at an intestinal detox, repair, and recipes. So we'll look at how the small intestine works, the different parts. We're going to look at how you can detoxify, repair that, get rid of any bugs that you have living there, optimize your Gut Flora. And then we're going to give you the recipe guide, which you see a picture of right there. There's 140 pages in there of gut soothing recipes. And then part four is optimizing your elimination. What do you do to get all the waste out? 30-day guided leaky gut repair and parasite. There's all the details you need of how to do this, what supplements and herbs to order, how to set it up, and we'll have plenty of time for question and answer to help you fine-tune it for you. There's also a 140-page recipe collection, which I mentioned, and then we'll have a series of assessments, checklists, supplement lists, resources, foods lists. A lot of stuff is coming up to help you. And this is just the beginning. But you've got 5 steps. Let me go back to that action plan. Complete the online assessment. For those of you who are visitors, we'll give you a copy of that. But what I encourage you to do is come on in, because there's a lot more than that on the site. Your daily gut rejuvenator, remember, was your water, your lemon juice, a couple of drops of lemon oil, a couple of drops of peppermint oil. Adding daily green drinks or blended soups. And in our recipe guide, we have plenty of those recipes. Do a pre-meal ritual before each meal. And then eliminate the foods that hurt your digestion. I'm excited that you are here, and we shared a whole lot. I want to just go through and share what some of the upcoming specific issues that we'll be going through. So if you have any of these issues and want more on them, we'll be going through, like, how do you help yourself heal and repair from these? Low stomach acid, H. pylori, ulcers, gastritis, reflux, irritable bowel, leaky gut and celiac disease, gallbladder congestion. And what do you do if you've had your gallbladder surgically removed? How do you make up for it, the lost function? Digestive enzyme insufficiency, and what do you do? SIBO, which is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Different from overgrowth in your large intestine, it's in your small intestine. Candida, another gut critter overgrowth, and what do you do about that? And then we'll touch on inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's, colitis, and diverticulitis, and some very specific things dietarily wise and supplement wise that you can do to start to heal those.